appreciate the philosophy behind that, I want to spend a few minutes to explain what we understand under the cosmological constant problem. Okay. The reason for that is that the community here at PI is quite broad, so I want to recap a little bit what the cosmological constant problem is. Apologize for everybody who gets bored. So let us start with asking what is the vacuum energy density standard model fields contribute to the cosmological constant. That's a very fair question. Also, a particle theorist might say, well, this is a very irrelevant question, because in particle theory, or in particle physics, there is no observable which is sensitive on the vacuum energy density. However, that doesn't mean that we can't measure it at all, right? The great thing is that gravity does its job with us because the vacuum energy density will contribute to the cosmological constant and thereby generate an impact on the global expansion history of the universe. And that's a great success story of gravity. So whenever a particle theorist is making fun of gravity, this is a good response to it. Now, what is the problem? Because there are some misunderstandings, especially in the TR community, about what actually the cosmological constant problem is. Well, the problem is that people who use standard candles to measure the expansion history, like Ariel Dubar from Stockholm University and Kumo Leibowitz from European Space Agency, say, basically from their measurement, you can infer that the vacuum energy density in the universe, as we observe it, is of the order, let's be generous, 10 to the minus 12 electron volt to the power of 4. Now let me make a meaningless statement. The meaningless statement is, the problem with this measurement, with that value, is that it's so small. And this is, of course, a meaningless statement, because I have to give you a reference which tells you what we expect, right? So what do we expect? Let's say we take any standard model field, let's just consider one for simplicity, and ask what is its contribution to the cosmological constant. So let's take any standard model field and calculate, for instance, free electrons, whatever you want. And the answer is very interesting. It has an ultraviolet story and an infrared story. So the answer looks as follows. The subheading terms, lambda here is an ultraviolet cutoff I had to introduce, because when I do a native calculation, the answer to that simple question is infinite. And a lot of people, actually, in the TR community, kind of think this is a cosmological constant problem. But that is not a cosmological constant problem. This problem is a piece of cake compared to the cosmological constant problem. Why? Well, you might ask, how far can I push this cosmological constant? Right? This lambda, this cutoff, sorry. Of course, I said it's an ultraviolet cutoff. So can I go close to the Planck scale? But then we have to ask, do we really trust our theories close to the Planck scale? Do we really trust the standard model close to the Planck scale? And the answer is no. So the point is, it doesn't make much sense to worry about that problem, because we have no consistent ultraviolet completion of that theory. We don't have that so far. However, we still can conclude that this can't be a problem. Why? Because the most powerful framework in physics we have, the effective field theory framework, tells us whatever cures that problem, this ultraviolet illness, can't have any impact on the infrared story of that answer. And I will present the infrared story of that answer in a minute. That's very important. There's a decoupling principle. Anything what happens at high energies won't have an impact, say, as the one infrared part on the one infrared parameter we have here, this is the mass of the standard field. Okay? So even without knowing the details of quantum gravity or whatsoever, of any completion of that theory. We can conclude this is not a problem because we don't see our infra results spoiled. We don't know the details, but it is at work. Okay? That's very important to keep in mind. So what is the problem with this answer? Let me summarize. Whether this lambda to the 4 term or lambda square term plays any role is something in the ultraviolet doesn't affect the infrared story. What plays a role in the infrared is this m to the 4 term. And what is the problem with this m to the 4 term? If I calculate the energy density, let's say, of free electrons, so we assume we have an effective field theory, let's be generous, up to the electron mass, maybe a little bit energy above the electrons. Let the electrons have a little bit of kinetic energy. Okay? So it's low energy physics of electrons, which we thought we have understood completely. Yeah? So low energy atomic physics. The answer will be, let's take the electron here, roughly 35 orders of magnitude off what people like Arne Luber and von der Leyen would measure. Just for the electron. I mean, what can go wrong with physics of energy scales around the electron mass? And this is the cosmological constant problem. The fact that the electron has a mass is a cosmological constant problem. Not this ultraviolet stuff, okay? So now we can say in a qualified way, the problem is, why is this vacuum energy density inferred from measurements so small? Because now it's meaningless, it's meaningful statement. Okay? So, however, let's come back to the first statement. I think that's a success of gravity that we can measure that. In fact, we can infer that vacuum energy density in the universe by no other means than gravity. So let's take that series. Perhaps a better question to ask, instead of asking that question, a more modest question, but maybe a sharper question as well, is the following question. So this was question one. Question two could be the following. Why does the vacuum energy density gravitate so weakly? Now, everybody will object to that question as an alternative to that question. At least every fundamentalist in Einstein's theory. Why? Because in Einstein's theory, it is gauge invariance which guarantees that both questions are equivalent. There is no way to discriminate both questions in four-dimensional Einstein theory. Okay, well, they are equivalent. However, in more general theories, like theories of massive gravity, where the messenger of the long-range forces has a small mass, or has even a resonance. In these theories, this is no longer true. This is a very funny observation. In these theories, the vacuum energy density can indeed gravitate in different ways than other sources. That's very funny. But just give a mass, let's say, to the graviton, and you find that gravity starts to discriminate. In other words, what Einstein wrote down, mass is gravity, is a very Northern American thing. He wrote down the most politically correct theory. Because it didn't discriminate any energies, any sources, right? If you give a mass, you get this discrimination. Yeah, and I want to talk about this observation as a new opportunity to address the cosmological constant. Not to solve it, not yet, but to think about it in different ways, okay?
Well, but how do you give mass in a consistent way?
Yeah, I will talk about it. No, I mean, consistent way is clear, right? I mean, consistent way, we already know, is clear, right? I mean, there is a known way how to do that.
but then you have two problems. You get potential ghosts and also.
No. Fields fog is ghost free. It's a unique ghost free theory of mass activity. No ghosts.
Linear.
Yes. Yes.
We can make
it but about a nonlinear condition, I don't know yet.
Okay. Linearized.
Oh, my, well, that's already something to think about, right? Mm-hmm. So let's think about that. Let's play that game. So how could we possibly address the cosmological function problem playing in a not too stupid way around with Einstein's equation? Okay? So what we want is actually the following. We want that sources with characterized, let's say, by wave numbers, who are much larger than a certain value, which I will call the filter scale, 1 over L. So this L, and it will be clear why we call it like that in a minute, we call it filter scale. Okay? Sources which are much smaller than this filter scale should gravitate according to standard Einstein. While sources which are, let's say, comparable or smaller to this scale, let's be extreme now because we are discussing an ideal setup, should get filtered out. Okay, then we try it because everything to zero is a bit too much, but let's be traumatic. Right? We live in traumatic times. So, okay. Now, what is this? What is this prescription? We all know from our second year in school in physics, this is, of course, in acoustic, the definition of a high pass filter. This is the very definition of a high pass filter. So we are looking for a high pass filter. Question is, can I generalize Einstein's equation in a consistent way? Okay? Honest. In a consistent way, so that I can accommodate this high pass filter. That's the question. And now people have made a lot of proposals. I will present you a proposal which looks super lame. Yeah? And we will attack that proposal. And at the end of the talk, we will see it is not super lame. So what is the proposal? What can I do? Let's write down Einstein's equation. I don't...
Again, so let me be clear. So you're talking about linearized theory or non-linear?
Well, that's a very difficult question for reasons you will say. No. I will give you the answer to that. I don't want to wait for that answer. The point is, I will present a proposal for linearized theory. Okay? And then, this theory, and Justin will speak more about it, turns out to be very rich. It has a strong coupling. So what we did not manage so far to do is really to find a nonlinear completion, but you can discuss certain aspects of that theory, especially the filter character, that are robust against a decoupling story, which Justin will present here. And when you decouple, for instance, you have a mass problem, okay? Then you can brutally covariantize the helicity zero component. So you can take it into account non-linear. That's possible. It's a very complicated story, and we will have a second talk. I don't know if Justin will mention that, but probably. Okay. In fact, we use that to constrain the theory. But right now, let's first see. It's not even easy to change the story at the linearized level. That's not trivial. Anybody who is attacking to immediately say, "Well, what about the nonlinear completion?" Do not appreciate that it's even difficult to change Einstein's theory modified consistently at the linear level. That is highly non-trivial. That's a cool thing about a theory, how robust it is, actually. So, of course, we don't want to change the Einstein tensor, because that would be a disgrace to Einstein. But Newton is already dead for a bit longer. So he has lost his copyright on the Newton tensor. So, what we will do is we will promote this Newton constant to a covariant operator. And here's the filter scale, L squared, and there we have a covariant box. And that's pretty much really the prescription of a filter, right? So the answer is, for certain sources, The response of the geometry will depend on how this operator acts on the geometry. Okay? So, and it looks weird, but you will see it's pretty cool.
So for now, I don't understand your response to this aspect, because it looks like you're proposing a non-linear modification, but not based on an action principle.
No, there's an action principle. So if you, okay.
And these are the full equations that you're writing down.
And this is a linearized Einstein. So let me discuss this for a moment, okay? Okay. This is a good, no, I don't want to give the impression that we know non-linear completion of what we are doing, okay? Okay, so let's discuss.
What's the argument of GN?
It's L square Fox. L square Fox. So I should write a little bit. L is a filter scale, and yeah, Fox is Fox. Or in other words, Fox like Fox. So this is the zero. Now let's ask what can we do? Let's ask what is the leading infrared behavior of that series. Now I have to make an educated guess. Let's be frank. So, first of all, I parameterize this operator a different way. I write it in the following way. I promote the operator character in the mass term so that for a constant mass, the theory will resemble actually massive linearized gravity.
Sorry, I also don't understand that. The H and the E.
Oh, I will define it. That is the linearized Einstein tensor. Modulo a minus sign, that's why minus sign appears here in a factor of 2. And it's given by Fox. I just write down the expression, okay? It's rather long. Nevertheless, the theory is easy to solve. Okay, here we go. Okay, that's just linearized Einstein. Yeah, but what about, so now I want to parameterize the leading infrared behavior of this mass. I want to divide some constraints on this here. So let's assume this mass is given by, so what really sets a scale is a filter scale, of course. It's the whole idea behind the high-pass volume. So 1 over L squared, okay? Now, the operator character I will write as the leading infrared, as L squared box to some power, okay? And the point is I want to constrain this power. That's the first step. I want to constrain that power, and then I will attack the proposal and try to utterly respond. Yeah.
Isn't that an operator not the vocal? If you've got in that spot.
Well, if you see, I mean, not necessarily, because you see, in the Donner gauge, you will get out of this thing another box, and then it depends what m squared is. If it is a constant, it's not non-local.
It's generally green.
So look, I mean, this thing here is just in the Donner gauge. So you get just a Klein-Gordon equation for the field. So it's not necessarily.
It's not a specific thing. Anyway, I don't look at that.
Just to jump ahead a little bit, what will you take L to be in the end?
That depends on what I mean for cosmology. It should be some supervised scale.
Well, to address the cosmological constant problem, what would you take it to be?
No, I have no choice. I have to take the cosmology. I have to take a supervised scale.
Is what you call G Newton, is it really a covariant operator then, the way you've written it? Yeah. You just argued that in the Gallander gauge, your boxes will cancel.
But it doesn't matter what gauge I choose, right? So it depends on how n squared of box looks like.
That's right. So m squared will depend on box.
This is not sort of part of the Einstein thing that can solve the high bound calculator only in the Gaussian case, right? So that's the only case you can cancel this box.
Well, I mean, in linear theory, Einstein tensor is gauge invariant, right? That's a strong argument, I would say.
It's not the matter of gauge invariant. The box is the operator, right? The integral operator. And it's if you don't have any, say, hyperbolic operator acting, say, box acting on this, then box inverse cannot be canceled. That's what I'm just saying. So this is non-local.
It's going to be.
That depends. Still, because I have a gate, this object. This object doesn't evolve over the list of degrees of freedom. So it's definitely legitimate to take a look at this.
There's nothing wrong with it being non-local. Maybe that's the way nature should be.
Sorry, but in a second, I think you'll show that we can derive this from mass.
Yes, that's probably the strongest. I didn't want to take the nuggets away. I will show you that this theory can be derived from field points.
So this is an effective description.
Let's get it right, because it's really a cool thing. Nobody has thought about that when writing down those equations first. That is just prescription for a high pass, okay?
But if alpha is not integer, then that would be not logical, right?
So in order to have the high pass filter character, we immediately know that alpha needs to be smaller or equal to 1. The question is, does there exist a lower bound? And the answer is yes. And the lower bound is unitarity bound of that theory. So we will use unitarity to constrain the leading infrared behavior of that theory. And we will solve that theory, so all these issues are very concerned. So, well, let's consider for the moment, polarizations are not so important. Polarizations are important when we want to address ghost stories, right? So let's consider the scalar part of this probability, of the Green function of the filter. So we forget about polarization for the moment. Okay? And we do a spectral representation of that object. So here we go. So in order to be unitarity, this spectral density needs to be sigma positive delta. That's a consistency required. Okay. Now, in the infrared, we want the high pass filter in our idealistic case to really block the passage of long wave lattice sources. Okay. That means actually that this mass term here, right, should start to dominate over 1. So, in the infrared, this will be of the form L squared over K squared L squared to the power of alpha. Okay? And now we can ask the question, is it possible that alpha could be smaller than 0? Is that possible? Well, if that would be the case, I could write the following. Okay. But then in the infrared limit, this contribution really would vanish. Okay? But this is impossible with a spectral density which is semi-positive definite and is not trivial. Okay. So your assumption was wrong, right? So from that we can conclude we have for the moment a nice bound from unitarity, which tells us that alpha needs to be larger than zero, and this was just a high pass filter requirement, smaller than one. Okay? Now Justin will say this boundary is a piece of cake. He will strengthen it considerably by using really exploring the richness of that theory. But for let me mention that because Romayer's of the audience. So some people have doubts about DGP for some reason. But the point is, I don't want to enter this discussion, but just to really show that within this framework, we can actually divide, this has been known, I mean, for a long time, that alpha needs to be smaller, actually, than 1/2. Right? So this is excluding DGP. But this has been known, DGP is not filter. Okay? But we will derive that, actually, by covariantizing the helicity zero in the video. So nice, okay, we have a proposal. But does it make sense? Well, how can we find out?
Sorry, I missed why it has to be less than a half?
Oh, that I have not shown just in this for that. I just want to advertise, he doesn't need advertising, but it's just a cool, it's just cool physics. no. Okay, what can we do? Let's solve the theorem, okay? Let's calculate the green function of this filter theorem. Okay. Oh, actually, let's do a little bit more work. Let's calculate this diagram. So I have two, for the moment, conserved sources, T prime and T energy momentum tensors. And we calculate the one graviton exchange, whereby with graviton here, I refer to this H driller. Still have to answer the question what that actually is in terms of physical degrees of freedom. Okay. Now, if we do, that's funny. I'm into that work. To calculate that, the answer is T prime alpha beta, and now comes the cool thing. T mu mu. Here comes now the polarization tensor. This addresses now the ghost story. So what we find is 1/2 symmetrization eta alpha mu eta mu beta minus, oh, and now we need minus 1/2 eta mu mu eta alpha beta, okay? And of course it's only the prefactor that matters. Yeah, and then the scalar part of the propagator, which is just box minus n squared box. Okay? Now, is this a nice result? Who thinks it's a nice result we got here?
Oh my god, nobody!
So is it a nice result or not? It's a devastating problem. Why? Because if I take the limit n squared goes to 0, n goes to 0, doesn't matter. We find Einstein. This is just what you would get in Einstein theory. You only have to pay attention to this factor here, this 1/2. So why is that a problem? It's fun, right, to rediscover Einstein. That's the big problem. The big problem is that let's take the case alpha equals 0. Then we're just having something like massive gravity. But we know that the only consistent theory of massive gravity, Pierce Pauli theory, that involves all helicity degrees of freedom, does not reproduce Einstein in the limit n goes to 0. This is a famous van der Meltmann-Sabar of this continuity. If you can pronounce that backwards, you get a copy. So, but I will show you that. So what is the most general ghost-free unique, let's add all superlatives here, linearized, that's not advertisement, theory of massive gravity or resonance gravity with all, including all polarizations, all ellipticities. So how does it look like the answer was given by Phil Spaulding? And it looks like the following. It is, again, this linearized Einstein tensor. Now I make no trivial about the H. Minus m squared h mu nu minus eta mu nu h equals minus t mu. Okay? So, of course, Fields Pauli was a bit conservative. He thought always mass, so the mass should be a number. We are much more modern, so we will promote this to the command operator as well. And that's still fine. All the conclusions of that theory still hold if you relax the provision that the mass should be a number. Why should it be a number? Now, we can solve that theory as well. We ask the same question as we did for our filter theory, namely, what is actually this diagram? Okay, so here we have t prime t, and here we have our messenger, which is now in a stage. Now, if we do that, this diagram actually is proportional to t prime alpha beta, t mu nu. Again, 1/2 eta alpha mu signifies, of course, eta mu beta. But now, minus 1/3 eta mu nu eta alpha beta. And then we divide, of course, scalar green function, box minus n squared of box. Now we see, in the limit m to 0, we don't reproduce Einstein. And this is a famous VDVZ discontinuity. Okay? So, but this was the only consistent theory of massive gravity we could write down. And this has this discontinuity. Does that mean that our filter proposal is a crackpot proposal? Yeah? Well, of course the answer is no. At least not at that level, that would be really depressing. So what? There was one thing we have never thought about. And that is actually what type of physical degrees of freedom our filter equation was. Okay? So, clearly, this theory here propagates helicity 0, 1, and 2. Now I can say, let's try the following. There's still a hole, small hole. Let's try to derive the filter equation from that theory by integrating out the helicity 1 and 0. Maybe our filter equation does hold only for the helicity 2 component. Okay, can we do that? Well, yeah, so, and this is a very cool story. So, we follow Stubbinger to do that. Of course, generalization from others from 1 to step 2. And we split up upon the following helicities. H hat will involve helicity 0 and 2, and then we have two helicity 1 and 0 terms here. So, we do. This basically following the Stutterberg story. Why do we follow the Stutterberg story? Because we want to worry about gauge invariance, or gauge issues here in that framework. So, what is the gauge story here? Well, the first thing I can do, I can plug this ansatz in Kirchhoff-Pauli theory. And of course, what I will get, because Kirchhoff-Pauli theory does only allow the propagation of transverse degrees of freedom, what I will get is a linearized Einstein tensor, h hat, minus, well, the standard combination, okay? Plus, that is the one contribution. And then I have to subtract the trace, and I have the trace two times. Now you can do the following exercise. Well, you see that immediately. And I will sell you that story under value for. There is a gauge symmetry. Okay, the gauge symmetry is the following. I can shift this h hat, which was only initially 0 and 2, in the following way. Where this the zeta here is just parameter, the infinitesimal parameter of the transformation. And the vector transforms accordingly in this way. Now, if you put that into the equations of motions, you will see that they are unchanged under this shift. The B conclusion is the equations of motions are gauged. This is the B conclusion, of course. We knew that right from the beginning, I think. It's the only consistency we have, so. But the point is, and this is a reference to Spivak's great work, that the metric field itself is gauged in time. Yes?
Normally, if you put in a mass in my hand in a gauge field, why is the gauge field?
Well, that's. You have to.
It's spontaneously break.
So, you have to. I mean. Okay, let me finish the story here. I mean, just put it in. It works. Do you have a eraser?
There.
Oh, cool. I don't. Let's see if you are satisfied at the end of the day. So, now, that was Stückelberg's cool idea. What was his idea? He said, suppose I want to follow Chomsky's advice and I want to build up gauge series of massive spins adjustable. Then, I can ask, I add a mass term, but it will destroy gauge pairs. I can solve that. I mean, I can cure it. Then I want to interact self interactions. I might be able for certain self interactions to cure that problem as well. But Stückelberg was much bolder. He said, if I can come up with a formulation where the gauge field itself is gauge invariant, which sounds like a contradiction, right? Gauge field is all about shifting gauge fields, right? Then it doesn't matter whatever polynom I write down in the gauge field, I will have a gauge invariant expression. Okay?
Well, sorry to interrupt. Stückelberg was one of the first effective objects in the symmetry theory.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
Yeah. But he also gave us a way to come up with a physical, with a manifest covariant description of gauge field theories. So now the observation is following. If H, mu nu, is gauge invariant under this transformation, what does this mean? That means that H mu itself is an observable in principle. That's pretty cool. So we are now back to Stückelberg's time, see what already the conclusions are he put from. I mean, he did that, but now comes the part. If that is the case, H mu must be bounded from above. Cannot grow like hell. If that is the case, because I can come up with sources, like homogeneous sources, there must be a filter at work in these series. This is a nice observation he didn't, in some sense, makes it explicit. There is a filter at work. So this is the observation we will build on. So already now we kind of have an idea that these theories, in some sense, have a high pass filter. And now I will show how. Okay, that we can do here. So let's integrate out the helicity 1 and helicity 0 components, which are hidden in the Gibbs-Pauli theory. Okay, in order to do so, the first thing I can do, I can ask, what is the equation of the elicit U1 components? What is the Gauss Maxwell equation? What else could it be? Wanted to say that already, so. With a certain current density here, and the current density is of the following form. It's d nu h mu nu minus eta mu nu h f. So, what happens in these theories is that the helicity of Montreux coefficients get fed actually by the helicity 2 Planck coefficients. This is nice physics, of course, but it helps us also to integrate the helicity 1 components out. And if we do so, the solution.
So, where does that equation come from?
Oh, sorry, I just took the divergence of that equation, used that Einstein-Hilbert term as transverse, and then I left over this equation I put again. Sorry. So, we can solve that for A. So, what we will get is A mu equals B mu over box minus.
So, because, yes, yes, where is this sort of difference out of?
If you apply the derivative operator on that equation, okay, you get here one box and one d mu r mu, which will get cancelled against this contribution here. And that's why you get really a minus sign. Okay? We just plug it in. So, but that's not all. The good thing is I can add an arbitrary solution to the homogeneous equation. And I call this solution theta. Okay? So, we have solved that. But still, we have a lot of helicity zeros floating about. Okay, so let's treat that. And before doing so, let's use current conservation to impose a further constraint on this HF. So from current conservation, we find the following. We find that d nu acting on HF mu nu minus eta mu nu box h hat is zero. This is nothing else but the statement that the Ricci scalar vanishes. The Ricci is zero, okay? But this helps us to extract helicity zero component out of this matrix calculations, right? Because, well, I have no time to show that. What we will find is that because of that relation, we can solve that algebraically, just asking for the polarizations. That this can be written as a spin 2 field, which only propagates spin 2, H dribble, minus a helicity 0 component. And the helicity 0 component can be re-expressed in terms of this H dribble. It is given by the transverse trace, if you wish, of this H dribble. Okay. Now we can insert everything in our original Fields-Pauli equation here. And what will we end up with is the following. We will end up with 1 minus m squared box over box acting on the linear Einstein tensor with H dribble as an argument, plus some function, which is a function of the helicity zero component. This here is proportional to the helicity zero. H driven and this homogeneous solution, theta. And this should be minus t mu. Now, the important observation is that we have a choice here because of this homogeneous solution. And you can show that you can always find the theta star so such that this f as a function of theta star is zero. Thus, we have derived the filter theory from R, from our field theory. Okay?
And you said somehow, in the third line, some current conservation or perhaps due to your gauge imbalance. It tells you that your Ricci tensor is zero?
I mean, this expression is just a statement, a linearized statement that Ricci is zero. Because you can write this basically,
in which sense, in which metric? I mean, I thought you had some source time on the right hand side. You say you have still the metric which is Ricci flat.
The background of Ricci flat, right?
The background? No. This is for the correlations, right? This h hat, whatever it is.
What we're saying is that let's say you've got a localized source, and you go outside of this source and try to calculate fields.
This is only for that. Outside?
Outside, yeah.
But you have the right side, the TV unit over there. Which can be present.
Is localized in one point, let's say.
Yeah. One point?
Not one point. It's
you are catching up on a statement which is totally irrelevant for the story. I never.
If it is relevant, please explain.
Okay. No. If it's irrelevant, I cross it out. I don't need that remark. I never use that anywhere. I just use current conservation.
Okay, so maybe ask just simple question.
I have two minutes.
For you.
Okay.
What is the metric? When you say metric.
I want to present you an example.
No, just define metric.
Well, the metric here
is what?
Okay, the metric is actually my flat background plus my H triple.
H
triple is a spin zero calculation. As I said,
zero.
Several times. Spend two.
Where is it?
Plus. Wait a minute. It's
1.6. He's going to have a spin zero because it's just sticky.
Plus 1/3 or whatever. D nu over n squared chi. So plus other terms. Okay? This is my method.
Is twiddle is spin two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it has two indices. What has happened? Okay.
So what? So A went out somewhere, but it just disappeared. Or
no, you can write A, but A doesn't couple to conserved source.
Oh, so that's
I can write it if you wish.
So
D mu A mu symmetrized. So I can write it if you wish. It's no problem. Okay. Well. I'm
almost. You started late, so you have another 7 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. So, the point is now Field's Pauli theory has a filter. Okay? So, muscle gravity theories, resonance gravity theories have a filter. That's a nice thing, right? So, it was basically all there all the time. Now we can ask, how does that change the story? In an example we are most interested in. Let's say we have a homogeneous energy density. Well, let's start with standard Einstein. So standard Einstein looks like this, of course. Okay. The most important observation for that equation is that Minkowski space is, of course, not a solution of that equation. That's a trivial statement. Right? Can't be, because for Minkowski doesn't propagate. Okay, that would be the only solution for lambda equals zero. But for lambda not equals zero, this can't be the case. Okay, that's true. But now let's take our Field's Pauli theory. for this, actually, Minkowski is a solution, Q to the mass spread. So what you will find as a solution for a metric in this theory is 1 plus 1 over 3m squared, or lambda over 3m squared, at a mean. So, what this theory tells us, very funny, just because you have introduced the mass, we somehow shift your Minkowski space, but at the end of the day, it doesn't need to be dissipated. If you plug in the helicity decomposition, we did, in this equation, you can follow even the time evolution, how the spin 2 for small times is really dissipated, and then shifts to something which oscillates around Minkowski space. And this is the most trivial example. Justin will come up with a lot of non-trivial examples of how those filter theories work. So the important message is that, or one of the important messages is that massive gravity resonance gravity accommodates the phenomenological idea of a Heisenberg. Okay, thank you very much.
So if I imagine taking the Einstein equation and pulling G Newton over to the right-hand side, so it says that any light-like component, if the Fourier decomposed G mu nu, any light-like component of it, Fourier component doesn't gravitate?
Well, in fact, what happens is everything gravitates differently than because we have this operator acting on the geometry. But, that's what I meant, that this is a very extreme case. Any infrared stuff gets really totally out.
But even very high, even very short wavelength modes, if they're light-like, will still not gravitate.
The short wavelength story we have not affected. That was the advantage of that approach, that you buy all the healthy stuff of the short distance physics, you know, from those theories. You don't modify it. You want to have a high pass theory. You only want to modify the infrared story. You don't want to get any problems in the...
I think the answer is that any photon is offset by an amount which is much bigger than inner cell.
Yeah.
That's why you say, if you had onshore photons, of course, what you are saying is absolutely right. But any photon in the universe that you measure, because of the interactions, is offshell by an amount which is bigger than Hubble. The inner cell is a Hubble.
It's really super.
So that's why you don't degravitate real photons. Well, if you had a single photon in the universe, empty universe somewhere, you would degravitate that one.
Yeah.
Maybe I can rephrase it with a different method. What you have is a non-local gravitational dot plus. So if you write down very finite graphs with shades of gravitons, you get a form factor. But that is because it's a G, isn't it?
Right.
So you also have a capital L. So what you're trying to do is to use the form factor to dampen the gravitational interaction with the vacuum. But this is a game I play also an assumption of these fat gravitons. But it runs into a serious problem which I could not resolve. Namely, that when you do this, you end up violating the equivalence principle in the fine structure of hydrogen.
Oh,
we had an argument with Polchinski about this, and he won.
Because your modifications were modifications at short distance, which is in the UV.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why this is IR.
I don't see how this could.
This does not change anything in the hydrogen. So you had exponents of the boxes in order to cut off the UV physics, which is a very nice idea, you know, to regulate everything in the UV.
Putting in a form factor with the resistance and trying to ignore Einstein, which is dangerous. And let us try this. It's an obvious problem.
I agree that it is a serious problem. You can be sure that you really thought about the EV, but do you agree that if I can derive that filter from Field's Pauli theory, then the theory has a solid foundation.
You know, I just tell a very quick story.
Do you agree?
In 1927, sort of thing. How is one night in an observation, took a electric field and oscillate, calculated the rapid energy,
yeah,
and put it on the right hand side of Einstein's first equation. He found that the size of the universe is the size of a golf ball. Right? He thought this is an obvious thing. So he went to his students, one of whom I talked to, the next morning I talked to the zero, who said, you know, this is a serious problem, this cosmological question. He explained it, he said, yeah. They said, well, what's the answer for that? He said, it means that gravity doesn't travel to the vacuum. This is 1927.
Nice. However, that's nice. You see, I appreciate the thought. The point is, first of all, we have nothing to solve. The point was, this is a framework to address that problem from a different point of view. It's not solved. That's very important to keep that in mind. Because the cosmology constant is not zero, it's small, but not zero. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Let's reconvene at 11.